Hey there, this is Mike Tramb, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room today is a singer and a songwriter who you might know best as the lead vocalist for the 80s band White Lion, but let me tell you, there is so much more to know about this gentleman. So please welcome Mike Tramb. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for that introduction. I started thinking about that in the 80s, you were never introduced as a songwriter.
No, you weren't. And you definitely make your career as a singer songwriter.
Definitely. Before anything else.
Look, if I was a singer songwriter, I would want people to know that I wrote my own songs. There's many vocalists that I love, like, and I don't know that people know that they write their own songs. Like Eddie Money, who sadly is gone, but he wrote his own songs. And I sometimes people don't get the credit for all their talent. They only get credit for one talent.
Well, even though I don't really want our interview to have much to do about the 80s, obviously the 80s is where most people know me from, but it just didn't seem to be an important subject back then. It was more about, you know, your look, you know, the sound of the band and the stage show and as flashy as you could be, both worldly or on stage. And I think a lot of people just eventually got caught up in that because there weren't really other choice. You know, it's like you're not going to go against the grain when the rest seem to be functioning quite well, just doing interviews where you basically say nonsense all along. And the second you started talking serious, it's like they went next, you know. So with time, I think there, you know, it got split, maybe not 50-50, but it got split. And I just sort of returned to who I am as a human being, who I am as a person, and also how I started up as a singer, songwriter, campfire guitar player. I never set out to be a rock star. I never actually set out to be part of the music scene. It just happened, and I fell into this band that were 10 years older than me. And from day one on, I took it deadly serious, and I started learning my craft. And every year, I saw myself improve. But, you know, probably about 20 years down the road, I started saying, I feel like I'm getting a grab of it now.
Well, I have to be honest, the new music that you're making, it's so good. If I can do a comparison for people in the United States here, I believe it's what John Bon Jovi has been trying to do with his later work. I don't more roots rock, more guitar oriented, kind of pushing that big 80s stuff as far in the rearview mirror as possible. I mean, I believe that's what you're doing, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, I'm going to say something now which might not be as popular with some as it would be with others. I don't honestly think that what you're talking about is John Bon Jovi's roots. Mm-hmm. They are my roots.
Yes.
And when I go back and I listen to the cassette tapes, when I start writing the early versions of the White Lion songs, which of course, you know, the day after Vito and I would be sitting and he would start be playing the big guitar chords and stuff like that, and the songs would be turned into the sound of White Lion, et cetera, et cetera. But when for the past 10 years, when I've been going around the world with just an acoustic guitar, I bring the songs back down to a without taking anything away from some of my heroes, which of course would be both Dylan Springsteen and Neil Young. Mm-hmm. When I take those songs back to basic campfire guitar playing, you got a melody and you got a guitar that sort of supports the melody. And I have, since 95, when I started my solo career, and now 12 albums later on, I have never departed from that.
Right.
There is nothing new in what I'm doing, and it's not groundbreaking, but it's 100% Mike Tramp, and every song deals about my life,
gotcha,
how I see the world, what I've experienced, where I might be going or where I might not be going.
Well, look, you just said you wanted to be honest, and I have to tell you that there is an honesty in all of this, all of your music. I mean, you're not afraid to be political. You're not afraid to talk about issues, or you're just not afraid to write a fun rock and roll song either. But it's fantastic. Now, so here's what happened. A couple, a couple months ago, White Lion song came on the radio, and I thought, oh, that might be interesting to talk to Mike Tramp. I wonder what he's been up to. And then I Google you, and just a world opens, Mike, for me. The first thing I buy is Second Time Around. I'm like, oh, this is his newest album in 2020. I didn't even know you had an album out in 2020. And then I just start to go, and you've had like an album like every 2 or 3 years for like the past, I don't know, 10 years. And I bought every single album, Mike, and this has been like my summer playlist. I can't believe it. And it's sad to me that I didn't have these albums when they originally came out, but that's the great thing about music. It doesn't go away.
I mean, you're really touching on a, both a great, but also interesting and also sad.
Yes, it's all of it.
You hear, because the thing is, I am very realistic and I'm very aware, even though it's not going to affect my songwriting and me recording and producing my own album, but I'm very aware that it's basically impossible for me to break mainstream or even half mainstream in today's world. It's just the way it is. I mean, I've been very fortunate that a lot of people have been coming to my club shows as I've been touring around the world. And those that have come are the ones that have chosen to continue the path together with me.
Right. Well, my job today is I want to start a new path today is what I want to do with this show, because, you know, I've been telling my friends about Mike Tramp music for the past couple months, and they're like, I didn't even know there was new Mike Tramp music. And again, like you said, it's sad, but let's fix it. Let's try to fix it a little bit. This Second Time Around album kicks off perfectly with this song, All My Life. What a fantastic song.
Searching high, searching low, read every book so I would know. Took a chance when no one dared. Gambled all my life. Call it bluff and call it cool. Play guitar and skip in school. Running wild with blazing guns. Show them who is king. Restless hide. Right from the start.
Yeah, that's one of those massive songs. I mean, you know, I called it my own Born to Run. Not to take anything away from my song or anything away from Springsteen's, but it just seems so natural. I mean, I don't sit and try to come up with ideas. My songs are an extension of who I am. When I pick up a guitar and I start playing, I mean, I never sat down and tried to learn Stairway to Heaven or Black Dog or You Really Got Me. I pick up an acoustic guitar from the case and I start writing a song instantly. And it's been like that through my entire year. I mean, sometimes I just put the guitar back in the case because I says, you know, I don't want to write right now.
Right.
But that's what happens. I never sit and just play. So that's sort of just the way it is. And at the same time, of course, I have carried the White Lion backpack since 91 when I broke up the band and ended the band in September 2nd and continued from there. It was a calling that I needed to move on. It was like the due time was up for me to move on with something, you know, different than what the 80s had been.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I mean, of course, Vito and I could have written another great album, and possibly if the band had spoken a little bit more like an entity or like a business, we could possibly maybe have found a way to survive through the grunge area and all those kind of things. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it was something I felt naturally that I have to move on.
Yeah.
There's something that tells me, you know, I got to write something different.
Yeah. I think you needed to step away from that.
That's okay.
Yeah. And take a break and then not reinvent yourself, 'cause you're telling me this has always been you. And then just come out and doing it the way you want to do it as a solo artist.
Yeah, I mean, everybody understands the concept of a mixing board, you know, where you have, you know, anywhere from 24 to 48 faders. Each fader represents a certain instrument or stuff like that. It's like once you start pulling all the faders down and there's two faders left, that's me and my acoustic guitar. It's just what it is. If you brought up the other faders, you would hear you would maybe hear White Lion and stuff like that. But once it's me, I haven't necessarily gone out and changed.
Right.
I have matured from the first White Lion album to the last one. And once that was over, I wanted to take the songs down. Also because Vito was an exceptional guitar player. And I wanted White Lion, the sound of White Lion, to remain on the four albums we did.
Yes. I respect your decision. I think it was a good one for you personally. And the new music, it proves it. I mean, the stuff you're doing now proves it. I love this line in All My Life, pussy whipped and chicken shit. When the road got tough, they quit. I mean, that one just jumped right out at me. I loved it so much.
Broken down, not giving up. At the bottom, but on top. Left for dead, but still alive. Coming back for more. Pussy whipped and chicken shit. When the road got tough, they quit. Lot of talk, but not the walk, bro. This ain't no 9 to 5. Yeah, I have been gone all of my life.
Thanks. I mean, you know, there's nothing better. I mean, you know, it's not blowing in the wind, but it's they're facts. They're facts of players that I've dealt with all my life. People want to be rock stars, you know, but they're really just whenever it's suitable for them.
Right.
And I simply just look back at 15 and a half years old. I depart my mom's apartment and move into the band's house. And from that day on until today, I have been on my own, made my own money, never looked back. I've been down at the deepest pit of hell, and I played Madison Square Garden, and I've been hanging out with Ozzy, and I'm hanging out with Steven Tyler, and I've met many great people, but I've never changed along the road. I've just matured and grown.
let me ask you about you personally. You're in Denmark.
Yeah.
That's where you've made your home all your life, pretty much.
No, I moved to the U.S. in 82 and mm-hmm. lived there for 21 years.
Oh, okay.
And then in 90, at the end of 99, together with my first wife and our 6-year-old son, we moved to Tasmania, the last island on the face of the earth before okay. you hit. And it was just a confusing time. She was originally from Australia, about, you know, making a move and then starting fresh again. And that's been sort of the story of my life. If something is not working there, I make drastic steps.
Okay.
And this probably was the most drastic step I've ever taken, because we end up on an island, which is part of Australia that is as feral as you could imagine. And it was great in the beginning because I'm really an outdoor man. I love the land right now. You know, I have my own farm in Denmark and stuff like that. So it was great. But after a while, I realized that I'm also a rock and roller.
Yeah.
And I write songs and I tour. And it's basically how I've survived for 45 years in this business. So then I started going back to the U.S. again and touring and stuff like that. And it was that time when it was in between the changing of the guards. It's almost like the business weren't really ready for me to come back or something like that. And I got discouraged.
Yeah.
Little by little, I started then viewing, you know, Europe, and I started touring there, and they were more open to something. I realized that the European were a little bit more dedicated to history, mm-hmm. Rock and roll history. I mean, you know, that for example, the German audience, they really follow you. They own every album. They have everything with you. So they really, you know, follow this growth that you've gone through. So bit by bit, I started building the solo career.
Gotcha. Another song on Second Time Around that hit me was the song called Anymore.
Heaven wasn't close enough. Had to go and test our love. Why can't you hear it? We don't laugh anymore. Why don't you see it? We don't fit anymore. Why don't you know it? We got no chance anymore. Why don't we face it? We ain't got us anymore. Never had a chance from the beginning.
This is a heartbreaker, but
there are many ways. I mean, the first song Vito and I wrote was called Broken Heart.
Yeah.
And that's just classic, you know, left hand rock and roll lyrics. I met a girl. Now she left. What's left?
Right.
Nothing more. You don't really say anymore. You know, no big statements, no great interaction between lyrical and stuff like that. You know, I would have to grow. And a song like Anymore is just about realizing the fact that we don't laugh anymore.
Yeah.
We don't talk anymore. And it's always this thing about, you know, holding on to nothing because we own the car together.
Exactly.
It's, and nobody's got the force that says, you know, it's not the point if we have a child together or stuff like that. You and I cannot live in the same house.
Right. Now, was this written from, obviously from some experience, some time in your life?
It definitely is. Yeah.
When you're writing a song like this and the lyrics are coming, does the song actually ever make you sad as you're writing it?
I think it's actually my therapy because here's a little bit of a revelation. For the last 17 years, my current wife which I have two children with, two phenomenal children, stuff like that. It's probably been the hardest thing that I've ever gone through. First of all, it's a very unusual thing because we almost have never lived together.
Okay.
And it's going to require another podcast to explain that. Obviously, the love was there that we wanted to do, but every time I got pushed together, she's from Indonesia. She lives in Jakarta, Indonesia, and that's where my children are right now.
Okay.
Our children, we have almost not seen each other for 1.75 years because of the COVID.
Yes, because of the pandemic, sure.
So, since I met her, there are probably about 5 or 6 songs on every album which is about us. I just write it because it's almost like a diary. It's almost like just telling myself that these issues are alive and kicking, good or bad. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes getting it out, and I even talk to the audience on stage about it and stuff like that. And I've just chosen that from the beginning, I want to just be right open with everything. There's no secrets. And I feel really good about that. I can face the issues that way.
Now, let me ask you a very honest question. Since you haven't seen your wife in this long because of COVID and things, are you longing for her? Or are you feeling like, I'm okay with not seeing her? I mean, how does that work?
I've always been a survivor. I've always been the goodbye man, the one who always left. I've always been the one who said goodbye to my parents, my brothers, mm-hmm. everywhere in the world. I was the one who had to get up the next morning and move on.
Yeah.
So I'm hardcore in that way. I mean, I can survive by myself. But what I realized through 17 years being together, that we are together.
Okay.
And now it's a quest more about making this together and showing that even during the hardest times, mm-hmm. when there is real love, and real love is not Valentine's Day or necessarily a great sexual relationship. It just means that the bond is unbreakable.
Right. Excellent.
And that's probably more where I'm just realizing that this comes once in a life, and you're put together with someone that you are meant to go the distance with.
Another thing I've noticed with your songs is you're not trying to write just a 3-minute pop song. You're not afraid to let the song breathe and just be the length that it turns out to be. You know what I mean? Because you have some very long songs, but they don't feel long. It's not like, oh, this is a 7-minute song. Am I going to be sick of it after 4 minutes? I'm going to say no, no, no.
Yeah. I've kind of made it, you know, and now, I mean, again, I'm really truthfully thankful for you picking up all my albums. You will see that on most of them, almost the opening track will be some sort of an epic. You can just go back to Coming Home from the album, Maybe Tomorrow, or
No one told you there'd be days like this. Counting all you have and what you miss. No one told you how to get away. Looking left and right, you found your way.
Or even go further back, all the way back to 2003 when I released the album More to Life Than This. There's a song, the title track is More to Life Than This, which goes through 3 massive verses which talks about basically, you know, the Columbine High massacre,
yep,
through, you know, the suffering of the farmers in America, and then the demise of rock and roll in the third verse, and the chorus goes, "There's got to be more to life than this," and it's just one of those things. It's a journey.
And that's how, you're right, that's how these songs feel too. These songs are a journey from start to finish, but they're so satisfying.
Yeah, not to forget, you know, on the previous album, Straight from the Flock, No End to War, that's an 8-minute epic I start with.
Yes, that's the kickoff track.
Hear the cries of a million children. And what they're building.
And that's kind of ballsy. I mean, if I could say so, some people might put that, if it was an album, maybe at the end of side one, or maybe the last track, but you put it right out there, you know, take it or leave it. And I love it.
Well, I mean, I've already written Wait. I've already written Little Fighter, or right, Tell Me When the Children Cry. Now it's like, as an author or as a film director or stuff like that, you know, one of my favorite both actor and director is Clint Eastwood, you know, and, you know, he had his movies along the way. And now in his life, maybe over the last 20 years, man, when Clint comes with a movie, they're serious movies, man. Yeah. I mean, they go deep. They go deep. There's a deep point to it. And I just think it's great that someone will go that, you know, you're not just doing, you know, just a quick Hollywood blockbuster, you know, right, where you know that, but you do one with all twists and turns and surprises and stuff like that.
And do you think that comes with age? Like you start thinking about things more, you start to think about, you know, how long will we be on this planet? And then, so the songwriting, you know, you embrace the seriousness.
Well, it does for Mike Tramp.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem to do that for David Coverdale or Paul Stanley.
Right.
But, you know, they have their right. I have my right.
Right.
I just, honestly, I feel a little out of place trying to be the one I was,
yeah,
in 1988, just to pick a year in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I also have said to many people after, of course, over a period of 25 years, that there would never be a reunion or so. And people keep asking and hinting at it. And I go, you obviously do not respect or read what it is that I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost put me in a position that I have to come out and say something like this. I can't be my Tramp,
right.
1988. That I don't want to be him is another story, but I can reproduce that vocal.
Right.
And I can't shake my ass like that. It doesn't feel natural to me anymore.
Yeah.
It almost feels strange.
Right. And you know, look, I love Paul Stanley. I love David Coverdale, but yes, it gets to be a little bit silly at a certain age.
It does because I think at times you forget about that, you know, I mean, when I look at my audience, who, you know, I have a couple coming up to me, and, oh, you know, I met my wife listening to Wade at a concert when you were supporting AC/DC. Mm-hmm. And now they're there, their parents, the three kids, and they now they identify with me singing about life.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to stand up there and talk about, you know, sex.
And put the spandex on.
I never was one of those guys anyway who did about that. I hate tongue-in-cheek sexual lyrics after you're 22. It, you know, it's just one of those, after that, you start having some sort of responsibility.
Right.
And I just think it's lame songwriting when you can, you know, come up with, because Still of the Night will always be there on that great rock album.
Yeah.
And, you know, A Kitten Got Claws or you know, Detroit Rock City, or, you know, which happens to be one of the more serious Kiss songs. But I don't want to hear Heaven's on Fire written today,
right,
for somebody 7 years old. I think that the Stones were capable of presenting the same kind of song or the meaning, but just in a different way.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you. Let's talk about your first proper solo album, 1997, Capricorn. This was about 6 years after the last White Lion album. And just some amazing songs on this. Have You Ever is another one of these gut punches from Mike Tramp.
Your mother, that she was more than God, and for all the life she gave you, you would give her twice as much. Have you ever told your father you were angry that he left? And when both of you got older, did you tell him you'd forgive? Yes, I have.
It sure is. It sure is. And sometimes I wonder, just like I wondered when I look back and sitting in 1985, living in my manager's house, and I'm home one day by myself, sitting with the acoustic guitar, writing, and I write When the Children Cry. And this is this is a story, of course, I've told a million times, but the point is, Ronald Reagan is the president. America was probably at its strongest point. I'm sure there's a couple of people that come out and say, there's something wrong in Albuquerque or something like that. But overall, America was feared around the world. Mm-hmm. It was also the best decade for rock and roll business. When you went to a concert, people were happy and stuff. It was just a great, great feeling. Me, of course, being you know, a foreigner, I lived there now for 3 years. I sit and write a song with lyrics like No More President and All the Wars Will End. A song that is more current today and more in place than it was when MTV was at its peak.
Little child, you must show the way to a better day for all the young. 'Cause you were born for the world to see that we all can live with love and peace. No more presidents and all the wars we'll end. One united world under God. When the children cry, let them know we try. 'Cause when the children sing, then the new world begins.
And at the same time, when I write Have You Ever for the first solo album, I make some statements that just comes to me naturally without trying to be clever. And it is asking my father why he left and also saying that I've forgiven him. It is telling my mom that she's greater than God because she gave me life and the freedom. And it's also telling my first wife, you know, about, you know, caring, bringing our first child into the world.
Yeah.
And last, have you ever held a loaded gun to your head? You know, in third verse, and did you ever tell your friends that they mean everything to you? It's just statements that are part of my life.
You know, but you put all that stuff together in a song and it hits a nerve, and, you know, and it probably helps it. A song like that, I feel like it helps people, because maybe they hear what you're saying, and then maybe they go and rectify some things that are wrong with their life. Does that make sense?
All the way. I mean, because life is, after all, life.
Right.
And it's, you know, no matter who you are, where you are, it could be different, but the main ingredients to life is sort of, you know, I mean, right now, for the last 2 years, most of the world has just lived by one word: survive.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's no other point. Right now, like I talk to my wife, we're surviving.
Yeah.
We're not doing, I mean, I'm creating a lot of stuff. I've taken 2 years now and really doing a lot of work on my farm, and it's great. I got a lot of great music and so on and so on. But I'm hanging in there. I'm surviving.
And who are you with, Mike? Are you alone? Are you totally alone?
Yeah, my brother has a farm just down the street.
So you're seeing some people. You're not just a hermit.
Yeah, but I mean, no, I've never been a hermit. But at the same time, I love being by myself.
Yeah, you like the solitude.
Yeah, I was never a person that would come home. I never really were a nightlife person. Mm-hmm. Being out again, I go to concerts and I go, you know, things like that. But I don't need anybody to lift my mood and stuff like that. Actually, I'm the kind of person that if you're together with me, let's do something that gives us some sort of like reward, something that when we're done, we go, wow, that felt great.
And what would one of those things be?
Doing outside stuff. You know, I love nature. And of course, you know, with a large farm and things like that. My brother has cattle. I don't have cattle. I don't want any animals on my farm. You know, it's just much more, but just overall something that brings two people together where you feel each other's heartbeat. And it's just not just a lot of, you know, bullshit and, you know,
right.
watching, you know, a mini series and just, you know, eating popcorn.
Gotcha. Sadly, that's what I do a lot of, but
no, I understand that. I also, I read probably a book once a week. I mean, I have a large, you know, a library of books, mostly nonfiction, mostly history and stuff like that. I'm a 9/11 scholar. I have almost 300 books on it. I have everything that exists on 9/11. I'm a member of pilots for the 9/11 truth, architects of the 9/11 truth. That is just something that I told myself, I'm not going to my grave with someone trying to tell me or sell me a lie. And it's just something that I've been battling, and it's frustrating seeing, you know, that how quickly everybody just accepted a false story, and just like in many ways they're doing the same thing with Corona.
You seem to have quite an affinity for the States without still living here. You're a piece of your heart is definitely still here.
The States is and will always be my greatest love. I miss the country to death. I regret leaving, losing my
citizenship. My, is it?
Status. Yeah, okay. I had a green card and stuff like that. Okay. But when I moved to Australia, I forgot that I needed to come back every year, you know, to maintain it. Nevertheless, the journey was about the journey. I love everything, but with that being said, at the same time, for the last 2 to 3 years, I'm absolutely disgusted with what's going on in the country. And I can't, I'm not one of those looking for massive changes. I thought that the American way was something very unique. And I deal with life in the way that there are two kinds of people on this earth, good people and bad people. And there's no color, creed, or race to either of those two. If you're a good person, you're a good person. If you're a bad person, you're a bad person. And I respect history. And I think that history has to be around to remind us what was once. And a statue that might represent something bad will always be a statue reminding us that this was a time we don't want to go back to. Removing a statue erases that it once was there. And that's just how I am. I don't have a problem with driving my car on the right side. I don't have a problem stopping at the red light. I don't have a problem paying for stuff in the stores. I have a problem with people using lame excuses to do wrong things.
Gotcha.
That is as politically incorrect as I can say it. But I think you understand what I'm trying to say is that it's not necessarily that I take political sides.
Right.
I just don't agree with where we're heading.
Gotcha. And I'm just trying to figure out how to pivot back into music.
But it all is because I can't do music.
Right.
Big way.
Right. Because that's what Paul Stanley and David Coverdale are doing. Just writing. Well,
you know, I opened Pandora's box right there. I'm just saying that my rock and roll is my life.
Right.
My songs represents me. It's like my battle cry. It's my last stand. It's my eulogy. It's my, you know, whatever you might call it.
Well, it's when I listen to it, it's totally authentic, and there it's no bullshit, and you're writing these songs for you, and you're hoping that people come along for the ride.
Yeah. I mean, I'm even already with songs like Little Fighter and stuff like that, which strangely enough, which most White Lion fans, at least in America, were never aware. that this was a song that I wrote about a little fishing trawler called the Rainbow Warrior belonging to the Greenpeace, which the French government blew up down in New Zealand in 1978. And I just thought about it. It was kind of like David versus Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
But so many times during my life, I've had people in wheelchairs. I've had veterans come up and say, this is my song.
Yeah.
This is. And I say, yes, it is. It is your song. And that's what my song's about.
Are you crying tonight? Are you feeling alright? I tell the world that you are down on your luck. You were one of a kind.
Well, yeah, Little Fighter is fantastic, and it does take on.
You can be the person in the song. It doesn't necessarily have to be, if I wrote Sunday, you can make it Saturday. Be the person in the lyric. It's about life.
Right. You insert yourself into the song. You become whatever character you want. And yeah, Little Fighter, to me, I didn't know the story of Little Fighter that you just told me, but I always just thought it was about the underdog. So in a way, yeah, that's what it is.
Case it was you know a couple of hippies wanting to kind of make the world a better place, and you know they try to do anything they can with the little weapons. Mm-hmm. with guns without bullets in, and they get crushed by the big machine, but 40 years later they're still fighting for the yeah. same cause.
I want to mention that in doing research, you're still popular in Denmark. Like in 2014, your album Museum goes to number 3.
I never messed around with drugs or drink a lot. Don't chase no skirt around the rainbow parking lot. I keep my weapons safe and loaded by my bed. This is the way I live and I have no regrets. And I mind my own business. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can take a lot of credit and stuff like this and this stuff like that, but there's also an interesting story about that the years when most of the Danish artists got established and made their stand and their footprints in the music business in Denmark. I was touring with AC/DC in the US and I had forgotten that I came from Denmark.
Uh-huh.
By the time I came back, they'd also forgotten that I was around. So it's I'm the one who left. I'm the one, you know, who was not afraid of falling on my ass. I'm the one who was not afraid of having nothing as long as I had me and my rock mm-hmm. and roll. So now it's just a different world. And you know, I'm just happy that, you know, I mean, last week I played a bachelor party for 10 women. And 2 days later, I was playing, you know, a private party in a house out in the woods. And after 2 hours of standing there singing my songs, I felt so rewarded.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you saying though, when you came back to Denmark, you embraced Denmark again, and then the country embraces you, and that's why your albums chart?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the music business, they ain't that big and stuff like that, but I found my place.
Yeah.
I found my place. I'm still the underdog, which is where I prefer to be. I'm still the one that's a little dangerous sometimes because, you know, ooh, you know, he went all the way and so on. So because, you know, the thing you were talking about before, you know, pussy whipped and chicken shit when the road off the quit, that's about Danish musicians. When I started playing with them and I started, you know, touring Europe, the second we got away from Denmark and they started having to share hotel rooms and deal with being away from the safety net of back home.
Yeah, that's part of it.
You know, I just says, you do not know what it means to give your life to rock and roll, to sell your soul to whoever it is you're selling it to.
Right. The people that make it are the people that are willing to sleep on couches and, you know, ride in a van with five other guys and the hard times. And that way, then you appreciate the success.
I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, I mean, there were, you know, there were the times when it was a couch, and then there was a time when there were a lot of single women that also had space for me in their beds and stuff like that. And you took the good with the bad,
right?
You know, those things. It's all part of the journey, and you know, it's not too long ago I finished reading a book that I've been waiting to read a long time. You know, The Road by Jack Kerouac. You know, and it's just one of those things. I was too young and too much in a different world back then. But now as I'm different place, I go back and read the things that I always heard people talk about. Things that were like key things, you know, on to life and stuff like that. And it's great to discover those kind of things.
I want to go to your album from 2019, Stray from the Flock. There's a song called Best Days of My Life, kind of a song about looking back at your youth. But as I was listening to it, I kind of felt that your best days might be right now.
Those days, even though the memories remain, I hope that we will always be the same. I know that were the best days of my life, thinking of those times just makes me smile.
Yeah, you know what? At least, I mean, if I could just have one wish, it's 20 more years of how I am right now. With being able to be healthy, spend quality time with my children and things like that. Obviously, a lot of people who don't know my musical history after White Lion will obviously thinking, this is a song about, you know, being on tour with Aerosmith and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's not how I took the song. When I heard it, that is not how I thought.
Exactly. When I refer to the brotherhood and the music, I actually refer to a period of 3 years, which was from 92 to 95, when I had a band called Freak of Nature, which did two albums. There I reached the peak of how high I could get musical experience. I'm not going to take away from how I feel now about my song, but being in a band, the ultimate brotherhood, how it was supposed to be, I experienced for two phenomenal albums with that band.
So these guys, those guys were not pussy whipped and chicken shit then, is what you're telling me.
No, they weren't. But at the end of when the band broke up was because they were pussy whipped and chicken shit because they were 10 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And I I saw them lose energy.
Gotcha. It's yeah, you, I mean, you're, it's okay to say you're 60 years old.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, it would be terrible if you would have, you know, to keep lying about those things.
I know, but you look incredible. You look vital, healthy. You got all your hair. You look fantastic, and you do all this outdoor stuff. So you probably feel great.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I come from an abusive family. I grew up in a real tough neighborhood. My mom were alone with me and my two brothers. My mom were, you know, the head of a big bar in a local place. You know, you worked there all night. You know, I grew up in a house of smokers. I grew up, my older brother became an alcoholic and later on a drug user, and it became his death, you know, many mm-hmm. years later on. I worked in a business, you know, where sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know, sometimes came in a different order. But I've never been in a band with drinkers and drug abusers.
Mm-hmm.
My first band were non-drinkers and non-drug users. White Line were enjoy a couple of nice cold Budweisers, mm-hmm. but no drugs whatsoever. So I've never been on that rave, and I've never smoked in my life. I've never done drugs and so on. So it just didn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
And maybe I saw life a little bit more as an athlete. It was very important to how I felt the next morning. And I've had nightmares of how it would feel to be Lemmy when you wake up the next morning. I wouldn't know how to deal with that. So in that way, and maybe in fear of not being able to deal with that, sort of just kept me away from going that path.
Yeah. And that's good. I mean, I've never done drugs. I've never smoked. And I don't know what that would feel like either. And I've never lived your rock and roll lifestyle either. But yeah, I just, smoking never appealed to me. None of that stuff ever appealed to me. I just, not my thing. Another song on Stray from the Flock, Die with a Smile on Your Face. Who's the female voice that's singing with you on this track?
Yeah, that's my bass player's wife. And she also sings, since you mentioned it, she's been singing the only background on my last sort of five solo mm-hmm. albums, and you know, also the, you know, second time around and stuff like that. And since I just mentioned my older brother, you know, he died with a smile on his face at age 63. And that song is about him.
But when you think in your head that you would only have three more years left on the planet, that's not happening with Mike Tramp. You know what I'm saying? Like your brother, in 3 years, you'll be the age that your brother was when he passed.
I was surprised he made it to 30, you know, and so on. So, you know, it's just one of those, you know, he was like Keith Richards' partner, you know, in that way, you know. Sometimes I just think that Keith Richards goes someplace and get his blood changed, and maybe sometime, you know, the image is one way, but you know, the dinner or whatever you drink in your hotel room. But yeah, I mean, but the thing was, he was the part, you know, the party everywhere we went. And he was on the road with me many times and stuff like that. And the thing was, I wasn't there. I was in Jakarta, Indonesia with my wife when he died. And, you know, he said to my younger brother, well, at least I made it to 63.
Wow. When everyone I know, we want to live as long as possible. That's wild.
Every morning when he woke up, that's how he woke up.
Yeah, just
reaching for a beer.
Wow. Yeah. That's it. Well, it's sad. I don't even know how to say, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. I mean, no, it is. It's just somehow he dealt with it and he was happy and he never complained, only when he didn't have any money, which usually he didn't have, but he always, and he was super intelligent. He was a rock and roll fanatic. He was like the guinea pig, you mm-hmm. know, before anybody else in the neighborhood, made his own first tattoo, tried everything else, became great friends with Ozzy Osbourne when he was on the road with me and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because Ozzy recognized him being real and no bullshit. So, I mean, it's just one of those things.
Let me ask you this. When a family member doesn't have money and I don't know, maybe they pissed it away. And if they come to Mike Tramp for help, I feel like you're like kind of a hardcore guy in some ways. Do you help? Would you help people out? Or are you like, no, I've worked hard all my life. Why should I give money to you?
Well, all through my life, I've been a bad businessman. Every contract that I've signed, I've always looked upon it as no paper will ever hold me. Gotcha. If I don't want to be here, I will just go walkabouts in the woods. Meaning that I've seen and met a lot of stingy, cheap people. And I was more like, if I have, you will have.
Nice.
And I have very little in the bank. I don't keep receipts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I've lived a great life. And you know what? It's just the way it is. I helped my family where I could. And you know, so it's never been like that. But the people you talk about, I've met thousands of.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure.
The thing is, I came from nothing.
This place I once called home, where my mom raised three boys on her own. No matter where I go, I take her with me. I won't let go. Don't fade away. Oh, cobblestone street.
A little teeny apartment. We never had a car. We never had a shower in our apartment, et cetera, et cetera. My mom never had anything, et cetera. But we were a family, and you know, we were always happy and stuff like that. And I think the only thing I ask of my friends is basically like this: I'm willing to die for you. Are you willing to die for me?
Yeah, that's
those are pretty tough requirements.
That is when you I and again, this is just from listening to the lyrics and listening to all these recent albums. I feel like you're a guy, you don't look back and you don't look forward. You wake up and today's your day. Is that true?
It's just refreshing for someone interviewing me who have actually done their some research and not just go Wikipedia or and White Lion stuff like that, because I explain it this way, that Mike Tramp's life is the endless highway.
Mm-hmm.
And at times I pull off an exit and stop for a while. That exit represents an album. And I'll sit there and I'll look back at where I've been.
Yeah.
And I'll look forward to where I might be going. And then, of course, I'm also in the present moment. And those usually will be the three sort of subjects of where I tell the story from on that current album, et cetera, et cetera.
I want to ask you about a song on 2017's Maybe Tomorrow. It was, I believe it was a single for you, Would I Lie to You? Now, for me, this song has "hit" written all over it. Have you tried to get some of the songs that you've written into the hands of, I don't know, I don't want to say younger pop stars, but into the hands of other people? Or when you write a song, is it just for you to sing?
Yeah, no. Yeah, well, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. But that's, I mean, you know, or it's interesting enough that when you look back to the 60s, of how, you know, when Dylan would release another song, you know, another band would record it also 2 weeks later and release it. It's just something that went on in the 60s.
Right, yeah. You
other people's songs. You're right. That song is like a classic American FM hit song.
Absolutely. And I could see, like,
it's of course it's 20 years too late. You could definitely place it in another person's repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been lucky enough to have the kind of people who take my songs and introduce them to other people. So I just write the songs for me and you know, so and so, and then I cherish when there's someone like you saying how I feel about the songs too.
Well, it's my pleasure, because I feel like I've been rewarded this whole summer listening to these albums. I like the packaging and everything you're doing too. Like, you have like a logo. It's like your name on it almost looks like a license plate kind of. And, the pictures are very outdoorsy and they're very just natural. And, all the albums, I believe, are just 10 songs, and, yep. And everything about, you know, if I'm going to say marketing, which I hate the word, but it's just perfect to me. Like, I feel like you're doing everything right.
Well, it's not so much the marketing as it is. I mean, all this you just mentioned is 100% me.
Mm-hmm.
All it is to me, I can say it in a little like kind of like a comical way. This is my AC/DC. This is my Iron Maiden, meaning I want people to feel when the next album comes that this is a continuation.
Yes.
Journey. And like I said early on, there's nothing groundbreaking in my rock and roll. I am a torchbearer. I'm a continuation of my heroes. So I want you to feel comfortable and familiar when you see this. Like you know, on the last five or six album, there's been me and a motorcycle on. And this, again, is that this is an ongoing journey.
Mm-hmm.
The endless highway where I am, it's just another little thing to kind of like, you know, follow the songs up with some visual, you know, pictures and things like that, that also sort of in many ways maybe explain, like sometimes you buy a book and you see a cover, but there's nothing in that has to do with the cover. I want you to feel that you almost hear the music when you see the picture.
Yep. Well, that's the imagery's perfect because it goes right along with what's inside the CDs and albums. And your label there in Denmark, it's Target. Is it the, see, when I say Target, people think of a
yeah, I know. Superstore. It's a horrible name. It's a horrible name. A record company would call themselves there. But, you know, when you sit in Denmark and you create a little label and you call it Target, you don't know what Target is in America.
Right, exactly. So, yeah.
And it's you know what, it's really just like, it's me and the head of the company. It's just him and I that have this thing, and he's got two or three people, you know, working together on that. And it's a very, very little, you know, business in a way that I almost would be uncomfortable if I suddenly were dealing with a lot of people who next day could be losing their job, just really, or really just doing that. I actually want people to be involved with my stuff, yeah, because I like my stuff.
They believe in you and you believe in them. So that's the best, yeah, partnership.
Yeah.
Whenever I have a guest on the show, I always contact the label. I try to get some CDs to give away in conjunction with the episode. And when I contacted Target, they said no.
Maybe you should just contact the artist.
Well, maybe I should, but I feel like you're making the art and they're,
it's really not that big deal. I can just look over on my bookshelf and have boxes of my CDs, you know, because I've been touring for the last 2 years, so they've been building up. So you and I could for sure, you know, come up with something. You could just, you know, you'll just contact me.
I'll contact you when we're done, and I'll give you a day to relax without hearing from me.
You know what? This is just one of those things that sometimes you do something. I had met this fan when I was in Brazil playing in 2006, and Brazil got hit really heavily with the COVID and stuff like that. And he was actually an artist, and he actually asked for the permission to record "Have You Ever" and stuff like that. And then, you know, he's collected about everything from me and stuff like that. And he says, "Man, you know, it's so hard to find something." I mean, you know. So I says, "Yeah, do you think you could send me this?" And I just decided to send him like one big ass care package. Just threw him down. I says, "You know what? It doesn't cost me anything. Well, except for just the postage."
Yeah.
Just go and make someone happy. And man, he was in tears when he got it a month and a half later. It's just one of those things.
Cool. I do want to let people know, right?
It doesn't require a lot.
All right. Well, I will definitely email you about that in a couple of days. I do want people to know miketramp.dk and also Instagram @miketrampofficial. But the number one thing I want to tell people, especially in the U.S., is go to Bandcamp, bandcamp.com. This is where you can find all of Mike's music and download it. All these songs that I've been talking about today, you can purchase and download here in the States, bandcamp.com. So
I think the greatest thing for me is just that people are aware.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, life moves on. So, I mean, it's obviously not everyone, you know, who follows everyone and things like that. But even though I don't follow, and even though there obviously there's a lot of bands out there, even from my time in big time in rock and roll that I'm not a fan of and stuff like that, I'm still pretty aware of what they're up to.
Right.
And it's not necessarily because I just am a sucker for news and stuff like that, but I have a pretty good idea about most things that goes on in the world, both rock and roll and politically. It's just kind of like I just skim, and I like to be current. I like to be aware. I don't want to dive deep into everything, but I probably go through 20 different news sites of the U.S. Every morning when I wake up.
Yeah.
And I just skim, and I come to my own conclusion about how many have had the same, you know, front page and stuff like that. And it's just, I think I have an obligation to tell myself that I'm current and I want to know what's going on.
When was the last time that you did a show in the United States?
In 19. I had a 3 months tour in 2019.
Well, yeah, I hope.
Every year in the U.S.,
and I assume you get to LA.
Yeah, I played the whiskey.
All right. Well, I hope to see you and say hello in person when COVID's all wrapped up and you get back on the road.
Yeah, no, of course. You know, I mean, I'm far from done.
No, I can. I know. I mean, you have 2021. You have a new single called "Everything Is All Right."
That's right. That's right. Everything is all right. Suddenly, quiet. By the water, all you can be. Suddenly, everything is all right. Did you hear? Do you see? When you believe, then you will be free. Suddenly, everything is all right.
Now, will that song be on the next album, or is that just a single?
Well, it is because after second time around, I came out with a limited edition double album.
Tramthology,
yeah. There's a smaller version on Tramthology called "Everything Is All Right," and that song is on that.
Okay, there you go.
Of course, the two albums that I would have had with me when I was touring.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's a 2-disc version and a 1-disc version.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, Mike, I do have to ask you a little bit about White Lion, because I feel like if I don't,
Fine. I wouldn't be talking to you if I hadn't been, if I hadn't started White Lion. I came to America to start White Lion. It was a triumph for me. It was great. The White Lion years were great and stuff like that. But as I said early on, I was not able to continue with it.
Right. I get it. And I would be happy to end the interview right here, but then I will get a ton of emails about why didn't you talk about White Lion, but that's not my goal today. That's in the past.
I think in all fairness, as I could be talking about White Lion and I wouldn't have a problem.
Right.
The story has been told. All information about White Lion, how the band broke up, why the band will not reunite, and so on. So is available.
Right. Yes, you can find it.
Secret to it. So it's not that interesting of a story.
I just want to mention 1991 Main Attraction. I can still remember hearing Love Don't Come Easy on the radio for the first time, and I just loved it immediately.
The comes out of town, baby, you and me, we gotta work it out, whatever it will be, feels so right, but somewhere deep inside, you don't know how you feel, you don't know if it's real, do you want it?
Yeah, that was that's a massive song that came 2 years too late.
Yes, absolutely. 1991 is, we know what's happening in the music business in the States at that point, but just, and it's got a killer Vito solo. And what was it like working with Richie Zito? Did you guys pick Richie, or did the record company hand him to you?
Interesting story. I mean, the Pride album and the Big Game album, we'd been recording with Michael Wagner.
Correct.
And Michael is the fifth member of the band. He was never really a producer in that way. He just really carried out what we were doing, creating it, never interfering, never changing anything and stuff like that. When sort of the record company and stuff like that wanted something for the last album, and Richie came in. Richie was a classic producer, which there were hundreds of in LA that just came in and followed almost a template and a textbook. But I don't think Richie ever really, I mean, Richie is a great friend and we enjoyed it and it was fun recording with him. But Richie were on to the next project before he was done with us.
Yeah, because he was
Wagner never ever gave us that feeling. When Michael worked with us, there were nothing else but White Lion for Michael Wagner.
And that's what you want your producer to be. You want him to be, like you said, the fifth member or whatever, however you want to refer to him. Okay. Excellent. What did you think when you were making your first video? Because the first time I ever saw or heard White Lion was definitely MTV when the song Wait came on.
Wait.
when you were making videos back then, was it exciting? Were you like, oh, we've made it. We're making a video.
Yeah. I mean, by the time we record, film the video in the summer of 87, MTV obviously had been going on for about 6 years.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was 81 or 82 MTV started. I think it was 81 or something like that. Anyway, so you can imagine how many videos, classic videos, had been around by that.
Right.
So it was just a must. It was just a natural thing you were doing. And we wanted the video to represent the band in a simple manner. We didn't want it to be too complicated or too, and I don't think any White Lion videos went above that. We always still were a little sort of just, you know, just like we also were in songwriting, that the band's music comes first. Even though we were competing with Rat, Poison, Cinderella, Motley Crue, White Lion never went as far as they did with some of the videos and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. You can, your videos, I mean, were more yourself,
and you will see.
Yeah, they're more performance than some.
They're not necessarily great videos. They're just really a performance of the song.
Yeah, no cheesy storylines. No, you know, no bikinis, no cherry pies, none of that stuff.
And like I said early on, that 100% represent how we were as a band.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, regardless if we love girls in bikinis and stuff like that, it's not a matter. I didn't really want them in my video.
Right. Yeah. It's to be noted that James and Greg and Vito, excellent musicians, excellent, excellent musicianship.
They're great guys. We had a great time and stuff like that. And many times I have to remind myself, even though I'm the only one who are friends, which all three, they don't talk to each other. But you do. Yeah, and it just goes back to who I said I was early on in our interview. I will not go to my grave with unresolved matters.
That's good. You shouldn't. And my last thing is about the second single off of Pride was Tell Me, and it only goes to number 58, and I don't understand how that's possible when Wait went to number 8, because Tell Me is a fantastic song.
I thought it went higher, but nevertheless.
Who drops the ball on not getting that promoted? Is that the label? Because you've already done your job.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Tell Me comes out sort of, you know, right before we're, you know, about to tour with Aerosmith and stuff like that. I don't know. When you go back before I said there wasn't anything to talk about White Lion, I mean, you know, there's obviously a very interesting story. Regardless of regarding, you know, the record company Atlantic Records, that it was no dance and bed of roses. Uh-huh. Remember that it was a struggle. They did not necessarily believe in the band and was about to drop the band many times. They didn't want When the Children Cry Out as a single. That was something our managers fought for and stuff like that. They were very good at selling records after you got the hit.
Yeah, after you got the hit. But not promoting the hit.
They didn't get the hit. Vito and I wrote was the hit.
Yes. All right, Mike, thank you so much. Let me mention to people right now, 2013, Cobblestone Street, 2014, Museum, 2015, Nomad, 2017, Maybe Tomorrow, 2019, Stray from the Flock, 2020 why am I drawing a blank now, Mike? Say it again.
Second time around.
Go search these albums out. Go to Bandcamp. Try one, and then you're going to buy another. And then you're going to buy another and another. That's what happened to me. I'm so happy I did. And I'm so happy that you gave me this hour of your time today, Mike.
It's been my pleasure, man. I wish all interviews were like that. I'd actually be up for more.
Well, I appreciate that that I got you and that you had a fun time and enjoyed yourself. So everybody, MikeTramp.dk, go to Instagram at MikeTrampOfficial and go to Bandcamp.
Official.
Yes. And I look forward to the next album for sure.
Thank you so very much. And you and I will just stay in touch via the old version of email.
Yes. And I will email you and ask for you to send me free stuff to give away.
My firstborn.
If you die for me, Mike, I'll die for you.
Yeah, that's the way we go.
All right. Take care, Mike. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bro. Bye.
Bye.
Change everything. You bet in a second I'd do it again. Nothing will be like it was before. Every mistake that I made in my life, all of the things that I didn't realize, I never let it through this door. Sound.